Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, welcome back to the Gear Garage Live Show. It's Tuesday, so we're doing it. And we'll just jump right into the show that I do, try to do every week. And the purpose of the show is just to answer questions that I receive during the week. Sometimes I talk about other things, but really, like, it's just a way for me to answer questions. I get a lot of emails, tweets, Instagram messages. People just ask me questions. I do the best I can to answer them in this format. This is a format I enjoy. We turn this into a podcast. It's not because this is a podcast. Literally, because people just asked us, would you strip off the audio and make it a podcast so people could listen while they drive or whatever? I wouldn't recommend that, but we've done that. And so you might be listening to it. It's really meant to be, first of all, live, so you can ask questions and interact. The comments are awesome. You can also ask more questions if you think of something while we're live. But also, it's intended as a video show. Like, we'll be watching video. So listening to it, you miss out on context. But I guess that's better than nothing if you want to follow, see what I talk about. So we're going to start with, We're going to start with today's show. First, I want to talk about the rescue clinics we're offering. For those of you who don't know, my company is Northwest Rafting Company. We do overnight trips. We do a lot of classes, and we do a lot of rescue classes as well. And I've decided to do some one-day rescue clinics this spring. And the first one, I should have it open up here on the page, but I don't have it open. The first one we're doing is on the March 7th, I believe. And we're just going to cover mechanical advantage and throw bags. And so the idea here is you get just a little bit of information in one day instead of 3 days or 2 days of just thing after thing after thing where you can't remember it all. The idea is having one-day clinics where you can pick and choose the instruction you want. So if you want to get better at mechanical advantage, you don't have to go to a whole 3-day class to get that. You can just pick and choose what you want. So we're really excited about this. There's only 3 people signed up. So it's a small class right now. The most we'll do is 8. So most of the be is 8 people. But the idea is it's a palatable way for private boaters to get some rescue experience. And you can choose a topic that interests you. And again, the next one's March 7th. It's $85. So check out our website, northwestrafting.com, for more. And I wanted today to do a rant on safety. You'll all notice that I've been doing more and more rescue type safety videos. And that's because I've gotten into some conversations with a few people online. And I'm reading incident reports from recent and not so recent incidents. And just because of the nature of my job, the people I know, I get a lot of the information about this stuff that most of you don't get. People call me, tell me, they message me. For whatever reason, I learn way more about accidents than is publicly known. And that's part of why I'm so adamant about teaching rescue, doing videos about rescue, because of that. And I just want to share some basic safety stuff that a lot of you won't agree with, which is fine. Oh, I can see my hat. It's all messed up. You might be like, oh, no, you're a safety squirrel, maybe I am a safety squirrel. I don't know. But I just know how people have serious injuries and sometimes die. And I feel like we should be trying to avoid that. And I want to at least share where I think some of the keys are to safety. So at least you've heard them. And if you ignore it and say, Zach's a safety squirrel, I'm going to ignore him, that's fine. But I feel a responsibility as somebody who has this platform to share my thoughts. So I'm just going to freeform this and just kind of go with some of my mind right now. And then hopefully I don't rant too long. The first thing is, like, you should wear a PFD. Like, that's obvious to a lot of us. And the PFD should somewhat matter. The flotation does matter. If you're running a big volume river and you're a big person and you're wearing a PFD designed for a kayaker, that may not be appropriate. And you might want more flotation. A lot of the kayaking vests, all the kayaking vests are not designed to go down to like your belly button, because you're in a kayak, you bend over. They're designed to be high on you, and they're really made for athletic people. If you're a rafter and you're tall and or big, you want flotation that goes down lower on your body. So when you're high, like the flotation's in the water. Also, you want flotation. Flotation does help. A lot of rescue people, instructors might say, I don't want flotation because I want to be more agile. I want to be a ninja. There's something to that. But if you're not a ninja, then you probably just want flotation. If you're just going to fall out of a boat and float until you get picked up, you're not a ninja. You don't need to wear a ninja outfit. You can wear some other outfit that provides you more safety. That might mean the Astral Indus, which is a higher flotation PFD. But again, the Astral is designed for kayakers, so it sits higher. So you probably want, I mean, honestly, the best PFD is the NRS big rescue, the NRS rescue, not rescue, just like the zip down the middle, dorky looking one. We call it the Justin Bieber. But flotation is going to help you, especially if you're bigger and especially if you're not a ninja. So I just want to share that. Have a PFD. Have one appropriate for what you're doing. Now, if you're doing class 3 on the American River, I could see you making your case for your ninja PFD. If you're running bigger volume river, something at flood, something with big holes, long swims, you're going to want that flotation. And I understand you may not want two PFDs, but this is something that will that could save your life. So the other thing is if you're a boater, you probably don't want to go be drinking. I know drinking has become some of the culture in boating, but you definitely like don't want to be drinking, making it part of, and people will drink before, during boating. I'm just going to say like drinking is something I would try to avoid. Also, like you want some sort of ability. If you fall out of a boat, you need to be able to make some sort of self-rescue. That could mean swimming somewhere. That can mean pulling yourself into a boat, but progress towards being rescued. If you're just going to hold on to your boat and wait to get rescued, that's not, in my mind, what boaters should do. For one reason, I started boating in California. So when boaters, when you hold on to the boat, there's rocks, there's big rocks. You could get slammed between the rock and the boat. So if it's like, if you see it's a big volume, the boat's kind of nice because of flotation. But if you're just blindly holding on to the boat through rapids, you could be getting smashed between the boat and a rock and could cause pretty decent injury depending on how heavy the boat is. And so just blindly holding on a boat isn't the best idea. Getting yourself in the boat or making progress towards getting out of the water, I think, is big. Most accidents for rafting, most fatalities, serious injuries happen out of the boat. So you should be trying to either stay in the boat or getting back in the boat. Just blindly floating, holding on the boat, to me, isn't that appropriate. I also want to say like shoes are really important. Like little wetsuit booties where we give commercial guests. Well, I don't give them, but some people do. Like you really want good shoes. And you want to dress for the temperature. If it's cold out, you want appropriate clothing. That could mean a wetsuit, that can mean a dry suit. I don't want to get into wetsuits versus dry suits right now. But something that, like, if you're in a dry suit with a neck gasket that works, like, all the stuff. And the cold can attack you many ways. And so being appropriately dressed for the cold. And cold water problems can start happening below 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, I'm somebody that's in the cold water all the time. I do cold showers sometimes. My body can acclimatize towards cold water. So I can do better in cold water than most. So you shouldn't use me as an example of what to wear in cold water. I'm trying to like set a good example, but also like I overheat sometimes. So I don't wear as much as some people might. But you want to, if you don't get in cold water ever, you want to be bundled up and warm, especially on an overnight trip. So those are some just quick thoughts. Wear the right PFD, wear a PFD, don't drink. Have the right clothes. And I think I mentioned something else. The last thing, I'm just like free for me. This is stuff that comes to mind is like high water is dangerous. When rivers are at higher levels and or flooding, there's an added layer of danger. And so people lately, when I say lately, the past few years, I've noticed have been kind of cavalier about when rivers are high. Usually when they're high, they're snow melt, they're cold, and it's hard to rescue people. And so just being really careful on like high water, cold water rivers. Okay. Rant over. And I want to, I get comments. Whoa, already. Does anybody know why the rescue boater tried to hike out from Greenwall in the first place? I know. I don't want, this isn't my story to tell. I've talked to the people that were on that trip. I know. I think there's going to be a, I'm going to look it up right now. I think there's going to be a blog about this coming out soon. Nicole was there and she wrote a blog post about this, and let me see if it's published. It's not published yet, but if you go to Nature Nicole Whitewater, first of all, check out her rescue classes. I really like Nicole. She's a great rescue instructor. She's experienced. She's a very thoughtful teacher. She's going to post something once she has all of her ducks in a row. So people do know information is going to come out. Please, my one thing I have to say about this is, like, please, there's a lot of rumors out there that are wrong. Please don't just, like, because you read it on the internet, think it's true. And don't spread bad rumors. I've had multiple people text me about this, assuming they know some of the story, and what they know is actually wrong. And that's not helping the situation. It's not fair to everybody that was there. So I would just be patient, give the people there a minute to, like, get all their ducks in a row. It's a sensitive topic, and it's going to come out at some point. Okay, gone long. What do you got? If I flip, I want to get back in and flip back over before anyone notices. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, if you flip, you want to get back in and flip it over. Or you just want to get back in, though. So it's an important skill, if you're a good boater, to be able to get back in your boat. You might not think every, you might be like, oh, people can't do that. That's too hard. That's just, you know, no, a lot of people can do it. And so if you're running like class four, especially, you need to be able to get back into your boat. Now, if you try to get back in your boat and you can't in class four, hey, like, we get it. There's waves and holes and rocks. There's reasons you didn't. It's really interesting. The lighting is really weird today. Like, you guys are probably seeing in the video, like, it's changing a lot. Anyway, sorry, side note. You might be cold. I've seen, like, class five boaters I've been with on the wind who can't get back in the boat. It's because it's so cold. There's just zapped of energy. We figured it out. But you need to make, you need to try. You need to, if you miss it half the time because of all those things, fine. But the other half, you need to be able to do it. But at a minimum, in, like, flat water, you need to be able to get back in your boat. So if you can't get yourself back in a boat in flat water, in my opinion, you shouldn't be a guide slash rower on class four. You just, if you can't self-rescue to that point, you can be a passenger where somebody else pulls you in. If you're a passenger and somebody's responsible for you who can do these things, cool. But if you can't get back into your boat, you should rethink how difficult of water you do. You might be the bee's knees, like, be able to run like class five rapids with your eyes closed. But occasionally you're going to mess up and you need to be able to self-rescue. Heidi, guessing you learned of the drowning of Hans February 19th, 2026. Any reflections on events surrounding the tragedy? I don't know that much about that one. There was somebody in a gearboat who flipped in Hans, took a long swim and drowned. I don't know a lot about that one. Yeah, so I can't really speak to that one. All right. So with that little rant, that's my basic safety rant. Let's go on to answer some questions. And first of all, I found a cool example of push versus pull move in a raft while also showing sweep capability, Bernard Middle Fork Salmon. I went a 9-1, so I'm high on low water vids. Planning on taking my 18-foot from boundary from now. Cool. Yeah, I mean, I threw a ton of videos up there about running 18-foot from boundary, so I'm sure you're watching those. But I got the videos up here when I watch them. And first of all, this is one I've talked about in the past, so I haven't watched it today since I came up, but I know this video. This is Bernard on the Middle Fork of the Salmon. And I think I've seen this video. I think I know what happens. A couple, just like, I can look at somebody's boat and tell you some things right away. I'm gonna do that. That's like my new thing. Is like, I can look at somebody from the GoPro and be like, oh, I know some things. So first of all, stuff's tied down pretty well. It's like he's taking it seriously. I like that. He has the high float PFD. Like that's the NRS. I think that's the one. That's a higher flotation PFD. Again, like smart move. Even though it's low water, having the high flow PFD is smart. I'm glad he's doing that. He has a Bud Light next to him. So he's drinking while he's boating. So negative point. It's open. It's actually, it's always fun to like see like people have an open beer next to him. If it like, if it can stay, I mean, I'm going to say if it's not a beer and it's like a sparkly water, if they can keep it upright the whole rapid, that's an impressive feat. But my thing is those blue chairs I see on boats, I can tell you right now that, I mean, that those blue chairs to me are a negative. They make it harder to row. They make you sit too high because they are the way that they're built. They're meant to go over that box like that one is, but you're sitting so high. It's really hard to get the right leverage on your oars and just row efficiently when you're sitting that high in a boat. And it's easier to fall out because your center of gravity is higher. So I'm not a very big fan of those chairs. And cataract oars, I'm not a big fan of cataract oars, but some of you are, so that's not a big deal, I guess. Okay, so let's go on. That's the chair. So we're trying to push this move. And this is the problem with pushing. You got two beers. Oh, beer's going away. His passenger went away. And he's back. So this is the person who sent the video in. This is a push versus pull versus downstream ferry. I'm a really pretty good in the oars, and I know the middle fork really well. I would not push this move. Like I can just tell you right now, this isn't a pushing move. For to get your momentum just perfect, when you're pushing you're going faster than the current, to perfectly make that slot going faster than the current is very hard to do. And if you overshoot it exactly like he overshoots it and hits that rock, you're toast. If you undershoot it, you're toast. And when you push, you are basically sideways. You're not exactly sideways, but you become sideways to the obstacle. So by pushing, this is the big downside of pushing. But so right now he's going to push. He is exposed to the rock. So he's going fast in the current. He's being aggressive. If he misses, he's going to hit the rock sideways. If I was making this channel, I would be pulling from right to left, using that rock on the left he's about to hit with the side of my boat to sort of spin and do an airplane turn between. So this to me is a pulling move that he's attempting to push. And I think there's way too much. I think that when people are learning to row, they're being told pushing is better, pushing is advanced, pushing is what real men do, whatever it is. And that's getting people into trouble. And so that's what happens. Push, they make it, explode the rock. There goes the beard, there goes the friend. And, start making lunch because you guys are going to be in trouble. Right. This is not good. Okay, enough of that video. The person also sent this sweep boat video of the exact same move. Turns out this is me. Now, a sweep boat is different than because you can't pull. But when I'm running sweep, I can make that nose go where I want, right? I'm not pushing in the oars. Like, when you're pushing, I can make little micro adjustments. All I care about here. Oops, let's go back. Sorry. Where do we go? We're past Bernard there. Where are we? Oh, we're above. Okay, here we go. So right now we can watch this part. This is the rapid above the stack. All I care about is the bow gets through that slot down. I don't want to get stuck too. I don't want to get sideways. But I'm thinking I got to get the bow. So I'm making micro adjustments with the front sweep. The little shallow rock that I got to watch out for just to make sure the bow gets past it. This isn't pushing. I'm going slightly faster than the current. When you're pushing on your oars, you're going quite a bit faster than the current. It doesn't look too bad. Right? In a sweep, all I'm thinking about is get between there. I can hit that rock on the right, the one he wrapped on. But in the sweep, because there's so much weight in the front, if I just get the bow past it, I'm done. All I care about. Get that bow in that channel. I'm going to hit the rock. But I get the bow passive. So it's a whole different thing, way of thinking. Okay. Cool. That's that. And then somebody says, right there, I'm pointed right and back rowing. I think he's going back to the video earlier where like he was pushing. You're pointing right. Yeah. So the last video, which I can't bring up because I just can't bring it up. But if I'm rowing the next.
It doesn't look too bad.
So if I'm rowing this right now, if I'm rowing this, no, I'm pulling, I'm slowing things down. I want to go slower than the current. When you go slower than the current, you have more time to do this. I'm going slower, slower, slower. Now I'm pointed right. I'm back rowing. I'm pulling over. You can imagine what I'm doing. I'm hitting that rock on the left to spin and spinning through the channel. That's what, how I'm choosing to go through that part of that rapid with an oar boat. Okay, cool. Let's get rid of that. Next question. Hopefully that's some information. I would say like you're going to do a low water 18-foot boat. You're gonna do a lot of pushing, but there's times you'll need to pull to make moves. And you do a lot of spinning. The boat's going to hit a rock and spin around. And it's super doable. Yeah, videos might help, but what helps the most is just go practice. Just go boating. Did they have helmets in the first video? They did not. I almost commented on that, but they did not have helmets in the first video. I didn't have helmets in the sweep. So, like, I'm not saying you should have to have helmets. I think that's a personal decision. And yeah, I'm not. They might have, I don't know. If you're worried about your skills, if you're pretty confident, I could see you making the case for not wearing helmets. I don't want to turn this into a helmet discussion because I know where that goes. Okay. Next question, August main salmon trip. Hi, Zach. I was awarded a main salmon permit launching August 10th. I have two friends that are new boaters, zero experience, that would like to join rowing their own boats. Oh, man. I don't know about that. I haven't read this question yet, but just reading that, like, they have zero experience and they want to row their own boats on the main salmon. I don't know about that. The group would be four rafts to kayak. Do you think they can be ready for the main by August, or is that not enough time for the new boaters to get enough experience? I mean, it depends on the person. I mean, if they can go boating a bunch between now and then, sure. But are they going to go boating a bunch? Are they going to get experience? Are they going to do it? Like people are call us a lot so they can get training for a middle fork trip, a main trip, whatever. They like get a permit all of a sudden. Like right now we're getting all these calls and emails. Hey, can you train us? I can give you some training, but nothing. And you need information, but nothing beats just time on the oars. And people say, yeah, I'll do it a bunch, but they don't follow through. And then they show up and they only went boating 2 or 3 days. That's how disasters happen. So they could, if they don't have a job and they go boating a lot, but I would just guess minimum 20 days of rowing class 3 before I would want to go with them. You can make your own choice on whatever adventure you want to go on with your friends. But if I want to go and have a vacation and not worry about too much trouble, I'm going to want them to do 20 days of class 3 minimum. That's just me. Okay. I will be the most experienced rower on the trip. However, I have a friend that will be joining who is a very experienced kayaker with Swiftwater Rescue Training. He'll be in the kayak. Swiftwater Rescue Training is going to help, but it's not the end all be all. Like everybody's like, I'm Swiftwater certified. Awesome. You took a class for 2 or 3 days. I don't know who you took it with, what you learned. You could have just had your hands in the pockets, your pockets the whole time. Like Swiftwater Rescue Training means different things to different people. So that doesn't, I don't know what that means. Right. And a lot of you know, like I'm a big fan of whitewater rescue and not Swiftwater Rescue. Now, they may have taken Swiftwater Rescue Training to design for whitewater people, or this could be Swiftwater Rescue Training for firefighters and then not very appropriate. So it really depends. As far as my experience level, I've done the Northwest Rafting Company Class 3 Rowing School on the road, Class 3 Safety and Rescue in the CLAC. and regularly boat class 3, primarily on the Spokane and Alberton Gorge of Clark Fork. Well, cool. Thanks for taking those classes. And the reason, so like our classes, the class 3 rowing school, the idea is like a 5-day river trip where you learn how to row. Like you get to row your own boat the whole time. You're getting time on the water. Like I said earlier, nothing beats time on the water. So when you take a class with us, that's 5 days of water time with classes in between. And so I think that helps people a lot. But if your friends, your two friends took our class at rowing school and that was it, I would say they're not ready for the main salmon. They could maybe survive it if they're athletic and up for an adventure. But I would say you'd want to do a class 3 rowing school and like 15 more days of practice for your friends. And then our class 3 safety and rescue course is, that's the information that we feel is valuable, especially for rafters, especially for private boaters. That's the rescue stuff that is key. You know, the things like throwing throw bags, flipping rafts, walking around in shallow water, how to handle entrapments, how to avoid accidents to begin with. I'm seeing flips so you can deal with them, and then floating downriver as a team. We cover all that and more in the class 3 safety and rescue. And then, you're boarding class 3. So you have the skills. I personally would worry about people who right now have no experience and how do they get that experience and will they actually do it? That makes me nervous. Okay. Next question. Rescue video. Been digging your thoughts on rescue. Here's a real world video. If you've gone over this before, please skip. That shows rescue. Curious how this fits into your levels and maybe some constructive criticism we could all learn from here. Nobody's here dogging these people, but what can we learn from it? Okay, I haven't seen this video yet. I got to pull it up here on my computer. And a couple quick things about video review. It does annoy people that I do it. And so I get a little hesitant to do it because somebody on the trip inevitably will email me and be like, or whatever, send them a comment like, oh, how dare you? Everybody lived. Why? Who are you to sit there and talk? I think there's value in us watching this and me sharing my thoughts. And I try not to dog on people, but there are some things that hit my pet peeves that I just can't avoid. And so sometimes I'm going to get like, say something that's going to annoy you, or if you were in this boat on this trip, whatever, I'm going to point out things that you might disagree with. You might be like, oh, like the last boat, like that blue chair he was sitting in. I just think those things are the worst. You might love your blue chair and you might be totally insulted that I don't like those blue chairs. I'm just sharing my opinion as a person. You can take it or leave it. If you don't want me to do a video review, send me more emails and maybe I'll stop. But because whoever sent me this video, I'm going to review it right now. Okay. Sorry, I had to do that little caveat because I've had a few people get upset with me lately about videos I've reviewed. Okay, so this is it. I'm a quick gear person, like looking at gear and stuff and what's going on. And I can just tell a lot from how people are set up. It looks like all these carabiners here, it looks like there's some non-lockers in there. I'm not 100% sure. Oh, you guys don't see my cursor. I think you can see my cursor now. There's the carabiners in the front right down here. It looks like non-lockers, which to me is not good. And then this is the line around the outside. The OS line is super loose. And this throw bag clipped in there, it's one of those like old school throw bags where like they come with hand entrapments. You could, if you fell out, you could get your hand or leg caught in that strap. So like I already see an entrapment there. And then I see all these potential non-locking carabiners. So I'm already noticing that. But there's a helmet. I like that the person is pulling. Like this is good to me. If they're pushing this, I'd be like, oh man, that's not good. There's lateral waves there on the right. They're pulling. Maybe they're gonna break through these laterals. However, it's gonna break through the laterals, but then the boat gets stuck. God, if it was me, I'd still be 90 degrees in pulling to the right. My goal is to get right. Now they're like parallel to the laterals, which are just funneling them back to the middle of the river. Right. Great start, but now they're just in the middle of the river. Ooh, there's the goal. And now they're sideways. Like, do not even use the current and pulling the shore. Oh, here's the next boat. Got it. Okay, I'm going to go back and see what happened.
Oh, they're in it.
It looked like they were pushing. I can't tell for sure. Anyway, there's a flip. One thing I do like right now is their boat spacing is pretty good. Like, they noticed a flip pretty quickly. You know, a lot of these videos I watch, the boats are really spread out, so rescue is hard. I appreciate the boat spacing. The first reaction, let's go back again. The boat flips and there's a whistle. I just always think it's weird. That's what people do. Like, whistles don't travel that far. They don't work that well as communication devices. I guess it doesn't hurt if you don't mind spending your time whistling, but like, you don't need to whistle when a flip happens unless you need to get people's attention for it. But usually everybody knows. It's just, I don't know, some rescue person or rescue organization is teaching anytime there's a flip or a swimmer, blow a whistle. One whistle means attention, eyes on me. If you want people to see you so you can point out the flip, that makes some sense. But it just, you don't need to whistle. And people are going to say it doesn't hurt. It can hurt in that it raises the anxiety level of everybody. Like you want people kind of calm here. Like you want people on top of this, but not heart rates rising. And these whistles just raise the tension level of the whole thing. And it could slow you down. Like, if you're a rescuer, I've seen this in another video I reviewed. The person was rowing, they saw the flip, they dropped their oars, blew the whistle, and then went back to rowing. That took a few seconds off their reaction time. Like, so it's not may not seem like a lot, but still, it's, why are you dropping your oars, blowing your whistle, and getting your oars back? Especially like, and if nobody can hear you, you're in the middle of rapid. I don't think anybody can hear you. Okay. Here we go. A couple of comments separately. Video review, super helpful. Cool. Yeah. If you were on the trip, thanks for sharing. Yeah. 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 I know people like the video review. I get occasionally somebody really mad at me for doing it. The whistle, it's like, why? What are they doing? And the next reaction I see is get the throw bag. Okay, so this is another thing rescue instructors are teaching that I don't think is a good move. And this goes back to the previous comment a little bit where the person's like Swiftwater Rescue certified or whatever. If their rescue instructor is teaching them to blow whistles every time there's a flip and get a throw bag out, they're learning the wrong information. This rope that's getting pulled out right now is a big hazard. Like, you throw that rope and now you have a rope in the water, whether the person gets it or not, they could get tangled in it. The person in the raft could get tangled in it. Use the raft as the rescue vessel, not the rope. If you have this rope out, let's say you throw the rope and then the person swims to the boat and you go to pull them in, what do you do with the rope? Do you let the rope free float down, or is the rope in the raft with the two of you in it? Because you can't pack it that fast. So the person in the front should not be grabbing a rope. They should be getting ready. They should get a paddle or something to reach out if they can, but be ready to grab that swimmer. That's what they should be doing.
Move. Come on, come on, come on. They've got boat. Please, they've got boat. All right, move.
This is where the people right there, could, if they were good, they could get back on that boat. They could. Please don't throw the rope.
Fuck. We're going to hit.
This is what happens. You don't know.
Come here.
Oh, it's actually working.
Turn it on.
Grab the boat.
It did work in that occasion, but now there's a rope in this boat. Like, just there's a rope at the bottom of the boat. So a swimmer, to me, as somebody swimming at the end of a rapid like this, they're not going to die. I'm probably not going to die, right? Them getting tangled up in a rope is how people do die. Like, there's multiple accidents of people tangled up in a rope. So now you have basically you know, I've heard this saying, like, a rope is like a dangerous snake. Now you basically have a snake in your boat, right? While you're all doing high tension stuff. But it did work. I mean, you got the swimmer. But you could have got the swimmer by rowing over there, too.
God damn it. Throw the rope.
Here we go. Shit. Here goes the rope again. I'm just not a fan of this. Row down to that boat. First of all, this is a pool. Just, you're in a pool of water. There's no reason to be in a massive rush here. The person swimming next to
the
raft.
On the other side of the boat. They've got the boat.
Ideally, can get on an upside down boat. And they could have. Sorry, I'm being kind of critical today because I'm really bothered by ropes being thrown from rafts. If you ran a belly line on this boat, like a cam strap or something from bow to stern, or some rope from the D-rings bow to stern, you could climb up that rope. A lot of Grand Canyon guides run belly lines like that. It's really hard to get on an upside down boat, but if you had a belly line that were practiced, you could get on the upside down boat. Also, back here, let's go back. Let's see. Right here.
God damn it. Let's go back. Throw the rope.
Right here, somebody who's in that boat, ideally the passenger, but somebody who's like a badass, this is the perfect chance to jump on that boat, right? And be on the upside down boat. That would help a lot. You could jump on the boat and then the upside down boat and then pull the swimmer in before things separate. And because it's flat water, it could be anybody. The person rowing could just do it. And then the people in the boat could probably figure out how to row flat water to get back to them. Right. He's holding on the boat. He's holding on the boat. I'm going to try back. I'm going to let go.
God damn it. Throw the rope.
I get that the rope, again, the rope did work earlier, but doesn't mean you should throw ropes. Like, look at this tangled mess of rope. People have died multiple times from ropes like this. We are not saving lives right now. This is not we're now not in a high tension situation. The swimmer's probably fine. This is flat water.
You okay?
They're just chilling.
All right. We're coming with the rope.
Probably half a mile of flat water.
Rope.
The person, there's two people down there. Now you have a rope in the water that's just hanging. They could tangle somebody.
Ashley, come to me.
And rowing worked. So anybody can jump on this boat right now and pull this person.
Holy fucking shit, bro. That was fucking.
You got to get in, Ashley.
Cool. Now you can, at this point, you can bulldoze this thing.
There's a little beach over here. It's one more second.
You have a couple choices. You can do it that. Just get some people on the boat. Get some flip lines. Get four or five people. That's probably
terrifying.
At this point, I would do that if you have strong people who are practicing floating boats back over. That rope has such a.
I got like sucked down and then put up and then sucked down.
Relax, am I wrong here, everyone? Like, there's that percent of rope.
Thanks, Jay.
To me, these ropes are very dangerous. Get that throw back out of the water. Either push this, bulldoze this boat to shore and flip it on shore. Or just get like four or five strong people who know how to flip boats.
We'll pull them off before we flip.
Okay. I'm working.
I think we're not going to see the floor in a minute of this.
I know.
There's a comment. What are your thoughts on how desperate they are?
I've got the boat.
I think that's pretty common for people who haven't seen flips very often. It's a bit of a traumatic thing. That rope is just like, you guys, you can row to these. What are you doing with all these ropes? But like, it's pretty common to freak out and be desperate. I'm gonna flip out. I don't want to judge them.
That one there.
If they were super experienced guides, they'd be like, "Oh, flip, cool, let's go do it."
I can't get to it without trying.
The more you see this, the more calm you are. The first thing I looked at was like, how far down is the next rapid? And I saw probably a long ways.
You're good.
So I'd be like, yeah,
cool.
Yeah, we got fucking.
Well, we're good.
You don't.
Yeah, y'all went into the fucking meat.
What are you rigging the belly line with? Yeah, like a long cam strap. Webbing. Webbing works well. You can like do webbing with a trucker's hitch. Rope.
What's that?
Is that rope attached?
Rope attached.
Yeah, rope is okay.
I got fucking.
Yeah, they're just pushing it to shore there, and they're gonna probably flip it on river left there in that big sandy beach. For the belly line, the guides I know usually have just like a 20. I feel like they use like a long wet piece of webbing. They have just a way to attach it to a D-ring, attach it to another D-ring. I think like one end has like a loop. So they put the loop through and pull just the buckle part through. And at the other end, they can like put the loop through a D-ring, pull the webbing through, pull it tight. I think that's a girth hitch on both ends, and then just have one thing they tighten it down with. And that buckles at the end, so it's not underneath the boat. But they can loosen if the boat flips, they can loosen up a little bit to make it easier to grab. So, or again, webbing with a trucker's hitch works fine. Rope is a little bit annoying because it doesn't sit flat against the boat. If that's all I had and it was the Grand Canyon, there's not that many rocks, I would just use rope. But like, having a pre-made webbing strap or just webbing works great. Yeah, so many ropes. I mean, this is the thing about rescue classes that's kind of driving me crazy right now. Not crazy, but just a little bit crazy, is that there's so many people teaching so many different things. There's not consistency in teaching and thinking and rescue. And there are instructors who are teaching anytime there's a swimmer or a flip, blow a whistle. I wouldn't teach that. One whistle means attention, eyes on me. A flip doesn't necessitate a whistle every time. That's my opinion. People have different opinions. Same thing. Like, there's just like swimmer equals rope. People are teaching swimmer equals rope. There's a swimmer, throw a rope. And I think they get that from the firefighting swift water rescue side of things. Because firefighters, that's what they do. There's a swimmer, throw a rope. Firefighters are not getting in a boat to get people usually. They're not usually swimming. They're like on the shore. They're not meant to go into the river. So their tool is a rope. If firefighters see a swimmer from shore, blowing a whistle makes some sense, right? To let everybody know there's a swimmer, right? And then rope, like swimmer rope. That's how firefighters are teaching swift water rescue. In my opinion, again, this is my opinion because there's not like 100% consistency among this. I'm open to having conversations about some of this stuff, but in my opinion, my strong opinion, we should only blow one whistle when you want attention on you to point out what's going on. Whistle. And then people look at you and you just go flip. And you point over there and it's like, oh, okay, there's a flip over there. Whistle. Swimmer. One, two, three swimmers. So it's a way to like, if you want to convey that stuff, people should look at you and you give the signal or whatever you're going to do. So in my opinion, in swift water, in whitewater rescue, we're not throwing ropes very often. We're definitely not throwing ropes from boats. Now I can see the 1 in 100 case where you might throw a rope from a boat. I'm not going to say never throw a rope from a boat. I'm just going to be like, you really shouldn't. Let's not make that a habit. And so I'm seeing this a lot in Colorado, the desert Southwest. This is the Grand Canyon, where people are learning this somewhere in the Southwest region, that whistle, swimmer equals whistle, flip equals whistle, and swimmer equals rope. And I disagree with all of that. Okay. What river is that? I'm pretty sure it's the Grand Canyon. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure. Would you use a belly line on a high water middle fork? Oh, for sure. I haven't in the past because I can get back in a boat. But as I'm getting older, it's harder to get back into a boat. I think I probably should start. yeah, it's a good reminder. Like, I probably will a high water middle fork. And if you have a, like the ones, the Grand Canyon guys, they're easy to put on. You just like put on what you have to flip the boat upside down. You just put the thing on one end, kind of bring it around the side, pull it underneath, and then pull it, you know, attach it to the cam strap, whatever, pull it tight. But I probably should for high water middle fork. You know, if it's low water middle fork, it could get caught on rocks. It could be an annoying thing. But for high water middle fork, where your fear is flipping a raft and not getting back in it, I think it'd be really valuable. Sean says, I use a long piece of webbing with a loop and a short cam strap at the loop to tighten, loosen as needed. Cool. Yeah. Long piece of webbing with a loop. Yep. That's exactly what I was trying to explain earlier. Yeah. Like long webbing with a loop so you can like girth hitch it through, like put the loop through, put the rope through, pull it tight. Same thing with the cam strap. And the cam strap, you don't really want the buckle under the boat, because if that hit a rock and hit the floor, you could pop it or put a hole in it. You want the cam strap pretty close to that D-ring, so you can also access it pretty easily. Yeah, I don't know where it is. Okay, sweet. Well, that's that. And I think that's the last question. I do have one more video that I am interested in sharing with you all. I've been wanting to do a video about lately, and I haven't taken the time to. Let's see if I can find it. Yeah, let me pull this video up.
Underneath, on your stomach. Swim, swim.
So this is me doing IRF throwback assessment, and in a class we did, I think we did this last year. And the one thing I want to point out, the reason I have like this video right now, is we so much think throwing, I'm moving topics, but kind of on the same topic. We learn how to throw bags in situations like this. And then we think in situations like that makes us think in situations like this, we should throw a throw bag. Right. So like in a class, we have to practice throw bag throwing. So we do it somewhere like this, but like you can do rescue somewhere like this without a throw bag. And that's what this is sort of demonstrating. So let's
swim, swim.
So that's me trying to get them to swim. That person knows this is a drill, so they didn't swim to me. The next little thing I want to point out is when you're coiling your rope, like I'm coiling my rope as I'm pulling the swimmer in, notice my right hand doesn't move. If you want your coils to throw easily, your right hand has to stay as stationary as possible. Watch my coils. I'm being very thoughtful.
Let go.
I'm pinning my elbow against my body so my right arm doesn't move. Your re-throw is all about not having the coils get messed up. If you're swinging them back and forth, they get messed up. But if you're keeping your arm in it straight, they're not moving, that's not going to happen. Also, if the coils land in the dirt or in the water like this, they're less likely to get caught up too. So I'm purposely having them kind of land in the water. They usually lay out kind of nicely. And then I have those nice coils. They're not perfect. They're just nice. That I'm very, very careful. I don't want to switch hands. I want to move them as little as I possibly can, because every time you throw a recoil, you're always taking a chance they get tangled. And everything you can do to keep them from getting tangled, you want to do. Like coil them a certain size, coil them, don't move your hand, have them lay in the water. And then when you have them coiled, keep them safe. Yeah, I'm being very thoughtful.
Swim to me on your stomach. Swim, swim, swim. Get over here, swim. Keep swimming. You got it. Keep swimming. Come on, let's go. Swim.
So this, he was supposed to be a victim. And like, I was so convincing as a rescuer in the class that I convinced a victim that was supposed to do nothing to swim. And I've done this multiple times in classes. And so the point I want to make with this, and I kind of want to make a video about it, but I'm not sure I will, is that like your voice is really a powerful rescue tool. I can think of watching videos of people going, like when you see on Instagram or whatever, people tying themselves to ropes on their rescue ring and diving in like Superman to save somebody. It's very contrived. I know that I could probably rescue that person with just my voice. If you tell people, get on your stomach, swim, if you're very convincing, you can give people the direction they need to get to you on their own. Now, you're not 100% of the time, but like all these times we're practicing, like jumping like Superman with a rope tied to us, or even throwback things, we're practicing it in places that are easy enough that your voice is usually good enough. And we should see as a main rescue tool that we have for rescuing swimmers, our voice in clear direction. And it's a thing worth practicing. Like I've learned how to get good at this by watching other people do it, you know, by watching other guides coach people to shore in certain places I've guided or just watched people guide and in classes. And I developed my own voice for convincing people to perform their own self-rescue. So that's what I want to share with you guys at the end, that like, we don't always need a throwback. We don't always need to be Superman. Our voices are a tool that's incredibly valuable for rescuing swimmers. Okay, so I'm going to get to some of these comments and then we'll be done. Let me make myself big here. Let me remove that. Heidi, any thoughts on the use of collapsible ladders, especially for those who may get tossed out of a boat while rowing solo? This is an opinion. I could be wrong. You can disagree with me. The people who sell the rope, the ladders, can disagree with me too. I think that ladders are okay if it's flat. Like if it's, so let me go to this. This is flat. Fine, use the ladder. But if you're here, wait, even here, use a ladder. If you're here, no ladder. You're here, no. If you're here, no. We're going. No ladder. Not even here. Don't use the ladder. You can get tangled in the ladder. You can get hurt. There's a little current. I wouldn't use the ladder here. Okay, then you can use the ladder. Right. So like, if there's current. If there's any current, it's way riskier than you think.
They're on the other side of the boat. They've got the boat.
So I think even here, I wouldn't use the ladder. I would wait till it's flat, and then like, this is pretty flat. Definitely don't throw the rope. He let the whole rope go, by the way. I think that he threw the rope and doesn't even have the end of the rope. Now there's just a floating rope.
Ashley, come to me.
But like, these ladders, nobody's died on a ladder that I know of. But I think it's something that makes me nervous. And so I say, if you can't get back in the boat and you need a ladder for the flats, sweet. If you're thinking about it being a tool for running class four, it's not your tool for running class four. And if you choose it as a tool for class four, you need to hear me say it's dangerous. You could get tangled in it and die. That's the thing. So I'm not going to see it as a tool. I'm not a big fan of the ladders for that, for those getting tossed out of a boat while rowing solo. First of all, if you mean rowing solo, like you go by yourself boating on your very own and there's nobody else there to help rescue you, I wouldn't do that. We can look at the American Whitewater database. Like every time like this comes up, we look at the database and we see in the last 20 accidents, there's always a few fatalities from people going solo. I wouldn't go solo. I'm not going to condone going solo. If you did not listen to me and chose to go solo, you would better be able to get into your boat 99 times out of 100. Like if you're going solo boating and you struggle getting in your boat, that's a problem. The ladder is not the solution. The solution is, one, you're going solo boating, and two, you're choosing to do that without being able to do a fairly important rescue thing. Okay, cool. Hopefully answer that one. They posted it was Dubendorf. Cool. Nice job on the coiling for another. Nice job on coiling the rope for another throw. Works great when you miss or have multiple swimmers to pick up. Yep. I mean, the IRF assessment is you have to throw the initial rope and then a rethrow to a swimmer 25 seconds behind. So I practiced this one a lot. Good call. I don't think I've ever thought about using my voice as a rescue tool. It's a huge one. And it's one that we overlook. You go to a rescue class and they're just like, all right, pull out your ropes, pull out your rescue harnesses, pull out all your tools. You know, but we don't practice just like coaching people to shore. And so, yeah, I think it's a pretty, the instructors probably talk about it. They in swift water rescue, they teach reach, throw, row, go, helo. And some people teach, they say speech, row, throw, row, go, heel. But it should be our, it's our first line of defense, I think. Yeah. I have quite a bit of swiftwater training and experience, but I would be more inclined to throw from a boat. I have quite a bit of swiftwater training experience, but I would be more inclined to throw from a boat than you have expressed. Definitely safer in a calm environment than in rapids. Yeah, I'm going to tell you no. Don't throw from a boat. Like, don't. That's it. Take it or leave it. Like, again, I'm sharing my opinion. You can be like, nope, Zach's an idiot. I'm used to that. That's fine. If it's calm, go get them. If it's calm, don't throw the rope. Push on your oars and go to them. It's calm. And also, there's no rush. Now, if you're above a class 6 rapid, that's sure death. Okay, fine. But if it's flat, propel your craft to them. Don't, why would you throw a rope? I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me. Ropes are so dangerous. And I say this with passion because I know of multiple examples of people who threw a rope that didn't need to, and the person died. That's the thing about my whole thing at the beginning about safety, my rant. Like, every year we hear the same stories over and over and over. And it's like, oh man, why are they wearing that PFD? Why are they drinking? Why are they solo boating? Why are they throwing a throwback from a boat? And you read the reports, go read these reports. And like, yeah, I mean, why are they doing these things? And so I feel it's, again, I've been doing this for a long time. So like, I feel like I hear the reports. I'm like, did nobody ever tell these people? I read enough of these reports. I've seen it over time where people die from things they shouldn't die from basic things like don't throw a rope from a raft. Maybe out of 20 times, 19 times is safe. Guess what happens? Number 20, somebody dies, right? Again, when you didn't need to throw the rope, you're in flats. Just go paddle yourself over there. If you're really good, your boat positioning, your boat spacing and positioning is excellent. Sorry to be on a rant about this, but it's just like, I don't get the case of people wanting to throw ropes. I get why they think they should do it, but it's not a good idea. Like, you, if you're a really good rescuer and really good boater and a boat flips, you are there because you anticipated where they could have flipped. You put yourself in the position of maximum usefulness to begin with. So you're there for a quick recovery. All your stuff was done correctly beforehand. If you're just all over the place, nobody's looking out for each other, that's how you don't do rescues. And that's why it takes longer to get to them. But my solution, instead of throwing throwbacks from rafts, is start with being in the right boat spacing, having people in the position of maximum usefulness, which I can talk about that later. That's just a term I really like from a book I read. And use your boat you're in to get the person instead of throwing this dangerous tool. Okay, cool. I got to stop ranting because my blood pressure is going up. Sorry, and I'm sure you're a nice person. I'm sorry to be so like passionate about this. There's a reason I'm so passionate about this. I've had to use my big voice to get people to do sketchy stuff to get them into position to rescue. The look in their eyes was priceless. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but this makes me think about rescue, a lot of rescues. A lot of times we do have to ask people to do things, and we have to do things or ask people to do things that are dangerous. The problem is we got ourselves into a position where the remedy is actually a lot of times not great. Like, hey, you need to do this nasty swim. You're on that rock. I didn't put you on that rock. You got on that rock. Based on the tools we have and where we're at, I need you to do this swim that is kind of crazy. But you can stay on the rock all day or do this swim or whatever the thing is. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure to comment on that one. Okay, another one. Good questions. How often do you hear about something bad happening with anglers floating class 2 or lower water? Fishing is why I float, and anglers look at me like I have three heads when I say safety talk first. If you look at the accident, the American Whitewater accident database, and you can a great thing to do if you want information about safety is go into ChatGPT and ask it what, I mean, we can do it right now, honestly. Let's pull up the internet. Let's go to ChatGPT. I just say, look at the American Whitewater accident database and tell me which class of rapids have the most accidents. So here we go. Based on discussions, blah, 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 intermediate advanced class 3-4 are commonly cited as having a high number of reported accidents. In community discussions around the AW database, some paddlers note there can be as many as more deaths reported on class 1 or 2 sections as on class 5. Class 1 to 2 sections also contribute disproportionately to accidents and fatalities in certain contexts, especially non-technical hazards, because many of the paddlers underestimate the risk in easy water. So when I'm reading accident reports, so basically the answer is like class 3-4. That's where most accidents happen. Not as many happen in class 1 and 2. Anecdotally, when I read through the database, and you can dive into ChatGPT, just keep asking its questions. Like just keep asking, say, what about this? What about this? What about this? But what my reading says is usually when it's class 1 and 2, it's drinking, no PFD, solo boating, inexperience. It's pretty like low hanging fruit. And so I would say like a safety talk is a great idea, but I can also like fish like, anglers are like, why are we doing this? I think if you can keep your safety talk to like 3 minutes, just basic stuff like, hey guys, please wear your PFD. Don't drink. Those are two things anglers don't do. They don't want to wear their PFD and they want to drink. So like right away, that's like two of the most dangerous things. But, and then other stuff like, if you swim, keep your feet up, talk about if that river has wood in it, avoid strainers, things like that. Like if you can keep a safety talk pretty quick, you don't have to even call it a safety talk. You can be like, hey, everybody gather around really quick. I just want to touch base. Just reminder, if you fall out, keep your feet up. Please wear your PFD today. Please don't drink. And there's wood on the river. So if you fall out of the boat and you see the wood, swim away from it. Whatever the things you want to talk about are relevant to that river and what you think they need. You know, as soon as you call it, hey, let's, like, if I do that on the wind, let's all have a safety talk. People will roll their eyes at me. Where instead of like, hey, let's get together really quick. And I just start talking about a few things. People are usually pretty respectful. The mindset place. Yeah. Position of maximum usefulness. Yeah, it's part of CLAP, CLAP communication, line of sight, avoidance, and position of maximum usefulness. And then one of the thinkings with position of maximum usefulness is you don't always put yourself by the most dangerous thing. You put yourself by the riskiest thing. Right. So if there's a death tree, right, but there's really barely any chance you'll go in there. And then over here, there's a hole that flips boats and like it's likely to go there. And even though it's less risky to flip, right, it's way more likely I might position myself by the flip instead of by the death tree. Right. You're going to put yourself in the riskiest place, which risk is like how dangerous it is multiplied by the likelihood of it happening. So put yourself in the most useful place to perform a rescue, not always the most dangerous place. Okay. What are your thoughts on waders? I mean, I don't wear them. I'm not going to wear them. So the thinking with waders is if you swim and the waders fill with water, people say you sink. I don't think you sink. Like you don't sink to the bottom. It just makes it really hard to swim. Because you have so much mass. You basically took yourself, your 150-pound self, and added 40 pounds. And it's 40 pounds that just doesn't help you. and doesn't provide flotation. And so, you know, it's like if you try to swim with waders, you're not going to get, it's just very slow going. If there's any current, it's just really hard to get out of the water. And so it depends. If you want to be able to self-rescue yourself, probably don't wear waders. You know, if you don't care about self-rescuing yourself, then I don't know, I guess wear waders if you want. I'm not a fishing person, an angler. Like, I'll fish once a year, maybe. So I don't teach people to fish. If somebody's like, I'm a fisher person, I'm an angler, teach me how to row, I'm like, you know what? I'm not your right guy, because I don't know. You're gonna want to do things like drink beer and not wear a PFD and wear waders. I don't, right away, those are non-starters for me. Maybe they work in your world. Talk to somebody in your world, because we're going to right away have a problem on what I consider basic safety. The people who run drift boats, who do fishing on the river, I have the most respect for. They have reasons for doing the things they do. I don't understand them. So I don't, but I also don't judge them. Like, that's a different world. They have to make their own safety decisions for their world. And so I'm just going to share what I think from a whitewater context, but I'm not going to pretend to know stuff that applies to fishing people, to anglers. Well, I think we did it, everyone. Thank you all for another episode of the Gear Garage Live Show. This one was long. It's an hour. If you made it this far, congratulations. You wasted another hour listening to me ramble about silly stuff and get on a soapbox and I don't know, get passionate about things that you may think are dumb, like, which is fine. But you spent another hour with me. Thanks for doing that. And we'll probably do this again next Tuesday. So we'll see you then.